Good morning.
Good morning, Arthur.
Today is the 5th of May 2008, and I'm now with Mrs. Cady Facondo, Assistant Inspector General for Training at the Sierra Leone Police Headquarters in Freetown, Sierra Leone. Well, thank you for your time. And before we start the interview, I'd like you to please confirm that you've given your consent.
Yes, Arthur, I've given my consent for this interview.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to start the interview by asking you about a little bit more about your personal background. If you give us an overview of your career and how did you get involved into working with the Sierra Leone Police?
Well, I've always wanted to be a police officer. The job of a police officer really is to help people, work with community members. I joined the Sierra Leone Police in 1984 as a cadet officer. I've worked in all the various departments, and just recently I was the Assistant Inspector General in charge of crime services. That covers the CID, the intelligence wing, and of course a unit that is very close to my heart, which is the Family Support Unit of the Sierra Leone Police. But presently, I am the Assistant Inspector General of Police, responsible for training.
Okay. Before we get into a few technical areas of police reform, I'd ask you broadly, what are the main challenges today in terms of public order and crime? And maybe other broader challenges in terms of police reform in Sierra Leone?
Well, the bigger challenges that we have in actually policing the country is the working with or looking at offenses being committed by the youth. You talk about lawlessness, you talk about not adhering to rules and regulations. Just 2 weeks ago, we were challenged with a task that was given to us by no less a person than the president himself, and that is to look at the issue of lawlessness amongst the youths. And of course, you have been to Sierra Leone, you are currently here, and you see us being challenged with policing the streets in terms of street trading. This is an issue that we have been battling with for over years, but it is now becoming a big concern to everybody. The roads are not so motorable in certain areas because you have wares being put on the streets. And again, when you look at the role of the city council, we are working closely with them now in terms of providing training for them so that they can police these areas. And we concentrate on the hybrid crimes that we are supposed to be actually looking at.
Well, your main area of responsibility in your current role is the training.
Yes.
As Assistant Inspector General, can you describe for us maybe some of the training that are currently taking place? What is the standard training for police officers, and maybe what other trainings have been integrated also?
Well, the training that we are currently undertaking in the Sierra Leone Police is looking at the general investigative skills of police officers. Just recently, about 2 weeks ago, we concluded training for the Crime Services Department, which covers the CID, the Special Branch, the CIS people. And this was a three-week residential training that was provided, and this was funded by the Justice Sector Development Program, JSDP. We work very closely with them, of course, with other security sector institutions. And one of the areas that was identified was to look at training for the intelligence and the CID people. We have just concluded, I must say, training for the local unit commanders, the LUCs. A very, very important training that, we at the management level and of course JSDP, we identified that training that must be provided for our managers, our senior managers, heads of divisions, local, they refer to as local unit commanders. And we looked at the issue of command and control, human rights, and policing the elections. We just came out of the presidential and parliamentary elections. We are now looking at preparing our people for the local council elections, and this is an area where we also put emphasis. But quite a lot of training has also been provided in the area of human rights. I'm just coming from the training school Hastings this morning, and we are providing training for future peacekeepers from the Sierra Leone Police. UN peacekeeping training is what we are providing for our people. We had quite a lot of applications for this, but I mean, we shortlisted 88, and those 88 have started their training this morning. Training is being provided at all levels, junior, senior, and middle managers. And even at our level, the executive management board level. 3 weeks ago, we were in Botswana. The AIG in charge of operations, the director of corporate services, Chief Superintendent Lahai, and myself were in Botswana. We were provided this opportunity to go and prioritize training that can be provided for the Sierra Leone Police. And now we are proud to say that we have joined the family of ILEA. ILEA is the International Law Enforcement Agency that is providing training in collaboration with the Botswana Police, and there is a wonderful academy there. We were not a part of this ILEA family before, but when we went and did our presentation and with our priority, even though we were not budgeted for as a country to attend the training this year, we just recently received news that we are now officially part of the ILEA family, and that we'll be participating in the 2008 training.
So some SLP officers will be sent to Botswana?
Yes, about 7 or 8. This has really made us proud because a total of 6 countries were invited to that 3-day training assessment conference. Burundi, Rwanda, Guinea, Senegal, Sierra Leone, and Ghana. And we are proud that we have been given, or we have been promised, about 6 slots for 2008. We gave our training priorities, and I want to believe that, come next year, we will be sending more officers to Botswana.
You describe a number of different trainings. For the trainings that are happening in Sierra Leone, the specialized ones that you describe, as well as the general trainings, who are the trainers?
We have a pool of trainers, trained SLP trainers, and we also have support from other areas where we have external trainers who come and provide this training. We also have had some CCU, the crowd control training, for the operational support division. And this has also been extended to the general duty personnel of the SLP. So in the event there is a public disorder, it's not just the red berets that go there. Before they can be called in, the general duty personnel are now in a position to take care of such situations.
So before the Red Berets, there was SD then?
Is you have the officers at the station. Quite a lot of crowd control training has been provided for them. But there are stages to which you can call for assistance. So we believe that before we allow the situation to get out of hand, we must train all our personnel within the divisions to handle situations. And when it gets to a situation where we cannot actually control, then we call in now for the OSD. I refer to them as red berets because they are armed.
They're the only ones carrying weapons. Yes. So now that the crowd control unit is also training is also for regular police officers.
Yes, so to come in for minor public defense.
So this is then on the job training. These are already officers that are brought back to the training school.
And this is not just limited to the Western area. It's ongoing in the regions as well. And we are also getting support from the UN police officers that are working with us. But funding is being provided by UNPOL, JSDP, and UNDP, of course.
When you say the training is also provided in provinces, the big training school is in Hastings,
next to Freetown.
You also have...
We have training centers in the regions.
In all three regions?
All three regions, yes.
One per region.
Yes, we have the big training school at Hastings, but the regional training centers also are in the regions.
In terms of the general training provided to new recruits, there are a number of new recruits always coming in because the Sierra Leone Police Force is not has not yet reached the 9,500 effective.
Yes.
Can you describe the training for us?
Well, the basic recruit training entails quite a lot. We try to cover so many areas so that it can have, like it's referred to as the basic training. The basic core courses that must be taught at the training school, the routine duties, traffic rules, human rights, that is one area where we put so much emphasis on, and of course the family support, the investigation of sexual exploitation and abuse.
Is there specific training for the family support unit, or is this a training that is dispensed to all new officers?
Well, for the recruits, there is just that basic training. But for training for family support, there is specific training. As a matter of fact, a manual, training manual, is now being developed by all stakeholders. You have JSDP, you have UNIOSIL, you have SLP, IRC, all coming together to work as a team for the production of that training manual. And of course, we work very closely with the Ministry of Social Welfare, Gender and Children's Affairs, and they too are a part of that group. So we are at this time putting together a proper training manual, even though we had one before, but it's like reviewed and one that was
specifically for the
family support unit. Yes. Okay.
And how much additional training, for instance, does it require to become part of the family support unit?
Well, it needs quite a lot of training because, as we all know, this is the kind of training that has to be provided for this kind of special investigation in the handling of matters that are reported. It's not like someone coming in for assault. We have rape cases coming in. We have unlawful canal knowledge cases coming in. And you have to have been trained to actually know how to handle the victims, handle the suspects, and at the same time know how to investigate so you do not miss the appropriate offenses that must be lined up against the report that is brought, so that when they are charged to court, we do not miss. I mean, the offenses are quite clear.
How the officers will then become specialized in one or the other and units, for instance, the family support unit, selected from the SLP or from the training school when they're in process? How does this function?
What we have as the management have agreed to do is to advertise. Now, when you advertise, people apply, you go through a process. Interviews are conducted, which includes the Director of Crime Services, the Director of the CID, and somebody from the Human Resource Department, so that we select the best. And when we do select these people, then they undergo training. And after the training, It doesn't mean that because you have been trained and you necessarily need to come there. Maybe during the process, you can't be identified as somebody who cannot really handle victims. It's not just the investigation, but it's the handling of victims that we put emphasis on. So all these come into play, and at the end of the day, we do this. Well, we have, because when we establish the family support unit, because of the convictions in the court, people were now aware that, you know, they can go somewhere and find seek redress. A lot of demand was being put on the SLP to have more family support units built within the station. We realized this, we accepted this. We went to JSDP and buildings have been provided. But at the same time, we in the SLP are providing training to build capacity so that they can handle all these cases that are coming to the police. Mm-hmm.
So only major police stations have FSU units?
Yes, yes. If you go to Lumley, I don't know if you know the way around, there is a small building sitting by. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things we advocated for, and I really put emphasis on this, is, I mean, the stigmatization. When people go into the police station to report a case of rape, I mean, you're exposing that person to more problems. So we thought, I mean, privacy, confidentiality are some of the things we put emphasis on. So we have this small building sitting side by side with major police or buildings, and then when they come, they know where to make their reports, and then they're treated with respect, of course, and there is confidentiality maintained. And the officers working within those units are trained, but we need to do more and beef up the strength, and at the same time provide them with the resources that are required.
So the family support unit is one of the success stories.
Yes, it's a success story. It is a success story.
Can you give us a little bit of the history of how did that came about and how it was developed, and maybe some of the challenges you faced and some of the
success? Well, actually, the family support unit, before then, immediately after the conflict in 1999, I was working as the chief police officer, now referred to as the LUC, at the Kisii Division, D Division. And this was a division that was infested with ex-combatants. So we're having a lot of reports coming in, and I thought it wise that, I mean, we have to establish a unit that was looking just at these specific cases that were being reported to the police. And then I established it was then referred to as the Domestic Violence Unit. We were very successful in trying to address the issue of domestic violence or sexual exploitation and abuse, with all the ex-combatants coming for their bush wives, going into communities and trying to grab them. And, I mean, structures were put in place, and we were addressing that. But then...
there was an experiment only in the Kisii Division.
Yes, because it was my idea, and I thought, you know, it has to be addressed. With me being a woman, the most senior officer in that division, responsible for that division, and this was something that is very, very close to my heart. So I decided that I should set it up. But then a few months later, seeing the work being done there, in his wisdom, the then Inspector General, Mr. Keith Biddle, thought it was wise for us to bring in a consultant from the UK to look at the family. It was still referred to as a domestic violence unit. But then the consultant who came was Mr. Bill Roberts. He came and he worked with us in the SLP, and we came up with the name the Family Support Unit. And we were having the cooperation and collaboration of a lot of stakeholders. It was becoming very successful. A lot of support was coming from outside. And we were now charging matters to courts. Convictions were coming out. And people heard about this. And we held meetings with Bill. And we thought it was not wise to just keep it in Freetown. It has to go nationwide because, I mean, Freetown is not Sierra Leone, and the ex-combatants were all over the place. So we started going into the regions. And up to now, I think we have about 22 FSUs nationwide.
And how do you evaluate, for instance, the success of these FSUs in terms of the access, the reporting, and?
Well, people now know where to go. I've always said, because of them knowing where to go and the accessing, does not mean that these crimes were not committed before now. They just did not know where to go, and awareness has been raised. They know where to seek redress. But the good thing about it is the courts, one of the courts was being supported by the UNDP, and we had a magistrate there. And this magistrate was a no-nonsense magistrate, and convictions were coming out. And we were talking about it constantly on the radio, that is all stakeholders. Even though we were not too satisfied with some of it, we needed to have more convictions. But because of our situation in Sierra Leone, there is a lot of family pressure, there is a lot of outside influence. People go to court, they don't want to be stigmatized, they settle out of court, they give money to victims. And for this reason, we thought it was wise to actually, we thought it was actually wise to talk more about it. So quite a lot has been done. But the thing that made the SLP proud was the fact that, people in the sub-region knew about the work of the Family Support Unit, the FSU, and they were now coming to talk to us. In 2004-05, UNICEF Liberia contracted my services together with another officer to go and train and establish a prototype of the Family Support Unit in Liberia. We trained the first 25. It was so successful. We thought it was a one-off thing. It was so successful. We established a prototype of this Family Support Unit in Liberia. These are police officers that we train, Liberia National Police. And they asked us to go a second time. Their section is called the Women and Children Protection Section of the Liberia National Police. We established that, and they thought we should go back for a third time. We then trained and recommended that we do a training of trainers. We trained trainers, and since then they have been doing their own training, and they have established more. So the thing that makes me happy about it is we are a post-conflict country. We've been through this experience, and we relate better in the African context and can actually pass on our experience. The cultural and traditional practices are all the same. We're all the same people. And who is even more better than us to pass on this experience to them? So we feel proud when we talk about the Women and Children Protection Section in Liberia and how far they've come and what they're doing now.
For instance, how long did the training of trainers take in Liberia? How long did you train?
We trained for about a month.
A month?
Yes, we trained for about a month.
And then they are themselves able to train
their own
for periods of...
Yes, they've been carrying on with their own training. And I'm in touch with them, and the feedback I get is the demand, like we had, was to have more police stations established in the regions, which they are doing. They are still doing that.
And the FSU in Sierra Leone is primarily staffed with female officers.
No,
or
I mean, well, it's my bet on this is to have say 70% female and 30% male. Victims relate better to women. Victims' children relate better to women. but we have some competent men working in the families of opportunities, and they're doing a fantastic job. Because I'm all for gender issues, but gender is not just women. Mm. And but the women too are doing well, and we hope that we continue this trend and allow all those who are qualified and competent to work in the unit come and work there.
Relative to the whole of the SLP, what's the proportion of female officers in the
We have a total of 9,200 personnel. As at a week ago, the strength of the female personnel in the SLP is 1,445 or 46. I must say proudly that we've come a long way. I must say we are out of these menial jobs in the police, being orderlies to senior police officers, which we don't have anymore. We have competent, capable women now being station sergeants, station officers, officers commanding, local unit commanders, and directors. And look at me, an AIG in charge of training. There is another lady, Mrs. Ture, she is the AIG in charge of the Eastern Region. We are holding up, we are doing our best, and we are doing good. It's just for us to continue to encourage those coming in, and the recruitment drive is something else we need to talk about, and that is, I mean, we are attracting quite a lot of young female graduates in the SLP, and this is a big plus for us.
And you think the success of the FSU, for instance, is responsible for the increase of female applicants?
Well, I cannot say it was the success of the FSU per se. The success of the female officers within the SLP as role models has attracted quite a lot of young female officers to be recruited into the SLP.
So that's in terms of recruitment and training. What are some of the challenges that remain for the next period? What are the priorities maybe that you've identified?
Well, the priorities really is to continue to look at building capacity in the area of investigations, and look at human rights training, look at junior, middle, and senior management training for our people, training at all levels. These are for us now. And also the training priority that we need to look at, and we're keenly looking at, only that it's a difficult area to go into, and that is forensic training. But we are talking to partners, we're getting support gradually, and we hope that within the next few years, we will be able to have a place where we can call our own SLP forensic lab, where we can do work and have all the materials, because it's
difficult
very
because
expensive
of the equipment
venture. Mm-hmm.
And that will require also trainers coming from the outside,
right,
for the forensics. It's often said that this kind of training is particularly technical and requiring outside assistance or quite expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have, from your experience, some of the trainings that have been implemented here maybe that were maybe at lower cost, not so expensive, but particularly successful? Are there some particular examples?
Well, we've had quite a lot of training done here that were sometimes of, I cannot say no cost, because I like to put low cost to no cost. When you go for low cost, then you head for no cost, because the resources are so meager. But quite a lot of training, say the CID training. We used to believe that only if you go to Yorkshire in the UK or go somewhere where you can be provided training, then you think it is the best. But we've had people go to places, say like Botswana police. Every year we have 20 officers going to the Botswana police. This is being funded by the Commonwealth, and they go and they benefit from such training. But in-house here, we try, government has been providing budgetary support for training, and out of that, we now at the top level begin to play around to see what our priorities for a particular year is. But most of the training that we do here, we believe are of high quality.
Maybe one last question.
Yeah.
5 minutes. Now you mentioned earlier in our conversation that the 88 members of the SLP have been selected for future deployment.
Mm.
This has been done in collaboration with the United Nations.
So yes.
Is this this is sort of a benchmark for achievement? And yeah. What are some of the other major achievements that you're particularly proud of, aside from the FSC that we talked about?
Well, going back to the peacekeeping aspect, I mean, some 3 or 4 years ago, we had our first 7 officers go to a peacekeeping mission in Haiti. 7 of them went, including a lady. They did extremely well. They came back. And we thought, I mean, we should set up a documentation, peacekeeping documentation center, just the basic. But because of our efforts, the Pearson Peacekeeping Center of Canada is now providing support to us. In January, we sent away 20 officers, 3 women included, to Sudan. They are doing fine. This is the first step of that 1,000 miles journey. Coming out of a conflict with our experience and taking it outside there and marketing it. Now we have these 88. I'm sure by the end of the day, we might have just 40 or less, but we are building up from 7 to 20, and I'm sure it's going to go up. But I am someone who believes in doing things right. We had quite a lot of applications coming for this particular training, and I had to cut it down to 88. We cannot be seen as an organization, the Sierra Leone Police, that is doing so well, and we try to deplete our resources just to satisfy the needs of those who want to go to peacekeeping mission. I said to them this morning, we have to build on what we have in the SLP. But at the same time, we want to work with the international community. You go out there, you work with them, you share your experience, you give it to them. And quite a few are not too pleased because I took them off the list, and that was in line with what I explained to the IGP. But at the same time, we would want someday to have a larger force go to a peacekeeping mission, but at the same time, maintaining a very, very good working force in the Sierra Leone Police. We need to serve our people first.
Mm.
Yes.
Now you mentioned that the current effective is 9,200. There were a number of, that was advanced a couple of years ago as like 9,800 or 9,500 as an optimal.
Yeah, it was 9,500. We seem to get close to it, but I tell you, Arthur, the problem is the attrition rate in the SLP. People live in squalor, but people will die to live in that squalor because of accommodation. They don't have somewhere to live. They need to live in that squalor. They need to have a roof over their head. And people are dismissed because we have the CDIID, the Complaints Discipline and Internal Investigations Department, that was set up to look at disciplinary issues. People are discharged from the force. People go out for greener pastures. They leave the SLP. So it's been difficult to actually get up to that 9,500 that we had set up before. And still, the number 9,500 has been reviewed by the top management team. And we are now saying we need to go up to 12,000. But look at how hard we've been struggling to get to the 9,500. So these are some of the issues, these are some of the problems we as an organization try to address, but it hasn't been easy.
And so the low salaries of SLP is one of the
terms and conditions of service.
And so the housing situation.
Right, right.
And so when you say greener pastures, there's very high unemployment in Sierra Leone. What are some of the jobs, for instance, that SLP could take
Well, you have people leaving the SLP probably to go for the studies. You have people in the SLP who leave the SLP to work in a bank. And these are all issues that have been coming up. But we try to motivate our people by providing training, by building capacity, by providing them even with uniforms, shoes, budget for that. So that, I mean, you cannot compare the looks of the present police officers today to that of those we had some time back before the restructuring, who were disgraced. And when I talk about the past, I always include myself because I was part of the system then, and I'm still part of the system. But I mean, you have to look back and review and know where to start from so that you can move the organization and people forward.
Very last question. One of the innovations, which was originally an experiment, is the FSU,
yes,
that you mentioned, a success story. Are there any other, whether it be innovations or just achievements that you'd like to mention before we complete the interview?
Well, we've actually achieved quite a lot. And when you talk about a department like the media department, We used to have tight lips, not to talk because you are not given the permission to talk. We were not a democratic police. You had to have permission from the senior boss. And whatever you had to say, it has to be censored. But today we have a media department, and even a constable on the street. If you stop and ask that constable to say anything about the SLP, they are more than willing because they know that the SLP now has this policy. Just say the right thing and be very professional. That's one area, the media. We also look at corporate services department. The corporate services department now looks at all the strategic issues, looks at change management, and this is where we are building up, looking at a plan for the next 5 years, how we can move the organization forward, the strategic development plan. We have a document. We, as accountable officers, the AIGs, the Assistant Inspector Generals, they have their projects within their departments. As a matter of fact, with my department training, I have looking at the curriculum of the SLP, looking also at having a police staff college rather than a police training school, which has been an uphill battle because the resources are just not there. You talk about man in charge of personnel and welfare, he's looking at welfare issues. So we have all these projects, and these are all being looked after by the Corporate Services Department under the direction of the Deputy Inspector General, who is in charge of crime change management. But we are all working hard and being kept very busy. And it's not just saying that I am the accountable officer in charge of training, I have these projects. We have our monthly extended change board meetings where we have all the regional commanders come in and give reports on what they are doing in their respective areas. We have the Inspector General, who is the head, reporting to the Minister of Internal Affairs about the well-being of the force, about what is happening, keeping them up, keeping them abreast as to how the organization is moved. We have actually changed over the years, and when we look back, we actually we're lucky to have somebody like Keith Biddle to have come out and without having any ties with anybody, do the right thing by changing systems, by changing structures, and by making it right. There are some areas we are now reviewing to say, well, we can go back to this, but how can we do it and do it right? Adrian Horn was good in his own way. He actually helped with the Commonwealth Safety and Security Project with his team of consultants working for him. And that has actually changed the mindset of the police officers that are in the SLP. So everybody is doing his own bit, and if I can reach the SLP, I'll say we are one of the best in the sub-region.
This is Khadifa Kondo. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Arthur.